Well, the Summit County Council meets in work session at the county courthouse in Colville just before 2 o'clock tomorrow. In the studio with a preview, Summit County Manager Tom Fisher. Good morning, Tom.
Good morning, Leslie.
So let's see, the council getting introduced to the Community for Children's Justice. This is a new nonprofit organization trying to help out the Children's Justice Center. They're hoping to provide a campus for the Children's Justice Center, where there would be infrastructure for medical exams, recording of witnesses, and more. Right now, we've got the Children's Justice Center basically in the bowels of the Richens building, so just too small and not adequate?
Well, it is too small. I mean, we have quite a need in our community for this type of service. And, you know, as much as we'd like to house them where they are now, it's a great place for them. We just have other services that need to be in that building in the future. And you know, it's just not ideal for them. We've kind of fit them in some empty office space, and it would be better for them to have a different situation.
Okay. So what they're asking for is some financial help?
You know, they're asking for – they're really looking right now at the infancy of their nonprofit, raising money. They've got a vision of where they want to head as far as a facility. And so and because the Children's Justice Center works within the county attorney's office and under their purview, it's a service that's associated with the county, and we will see them through in the future as they continue to provide service for children.
All right. So in terms of this year's budget, though, or is
it's
there
not,
a line
it's
item?
Not a budget budgetary item this year. It's simply a report to council on their progress, and then where and when they would like to head.
All right. So there's Dr. Lasky also talking about funding for a medical exam, some $30,000. Again, is that a separate proposal? Or
It's a separate proposal. I think largely they will the Children's Justice Center and the attorney's office will seek some other sources for funding of bringing this service within the Children's Justice Center to allow medical examination of those that might be seeking these types of services right here in Summit County. Right now, they have to go down to Salt Lake City when there is a traumatic event.
Yeah. So I was going to say the Children's Justice Center was the recipient of the Women's Giving Fund grant, $30,000 or so.
Absolutely.
So what
and
are they doing with that money?
And great seed money to start off this campaign to bring a better living situation for the Children's Justice Center.
So do we have a location? And I guess I was kind of thinking, I mean, the Peace House is building a campus. Seems like it would make sense there.
Yeah, you know, I'm not exactly sure where in the community they'd like to target. I think there's some vision about kind of what it looks like and what it feels like, and that might point to a specific place. But I'm going to let them speak to that.
Okay. Let's see, a presentation from Public Works and Engineering. Is this the first of the budget presentations?
The kickoff of the county budget process, yes. So Public Works leads it off. Really, quite a big part of our budget, over 34% of the county's operating budget is in public works in one form or another, either in road maintenance, engineering, transit, solid waste, landfill management, or fleet maintenance. So it's quite a big part, and Derek Radke will be going over that on Wednesday.
You said that's 34% of the capital budget or the
operating budget? That's correct.
All right.
So that, you know, traditionally, the largest parts of our operating budget are in our criminal justice area, sheriff's office, attorney's office, and then in our basic infrastructure, so in our public works.
All right. Does the budget call have the capital project for the new landfill cell?
It does, but it's not within the operating budget. It's within the capital budget. So we'll be hearing about the capital budget the following week.
All right. What about permits for that landfill? My
sure.
understanding is that you don't have them.
Well, you asked me about that last week, so I looked it up a little bit. We do have the permit has been filed, and the process that the state goes through is as we get further into design, which we are now, we have to turn in our final design in order to get the final permitting. So we're in that process.
All right. Tougher than ever, I'm guessing, to get one of these.
Landfills are one of the toughest and most expensive things to permit in the United States. And so, you know, that's why we want to keep our currently permitted total footprint of a landfill as active as possible for as long as possible.
All right. So in terms of any requests from Public Works and Engineering, are they asking for more personnel?
No, nothing unusual. Same level of personnel, 47 employees for Public Works in the 17 budget.
All right. You told the council that the department request all told are about $6,000 more than your office projects you can spend. So
$6 million.
$6 million, yes.
So $6,000 would be easy.
Yeah, right. So will each department plead its case for what they wanted originally, or does the council hear what the budget committee recommends? How do you figure that out?
I think it depends on the department. There are some departments that probably don't agree with the manager's recommendations, and they have the opportunity to make that case to the council. And certainly that's the process we go through, and no hard feelings there from the manager. If anybody feels very strongly, I really want them to make that case to the council. We probably will hear a couple of those.
Yeah. Let's see. The county fairgrounds master plan, is the staff recommending approval of Plan A?
They're recommending approval of the plan, that they presented last week. I can't remember if that's A, B, C, or D, or Z, but anyway, the one that they went over last week.
So can you tell us what that then entails?
So it does. It entails kind of a four-phased project, where the first phase would be the replacement of the Quonset hut with a multi-purpose flat floor, high ceiling building that would be used for larger event type things, as well as the indoor events of the fair, and then some replacement of some of the animal buildings with structures that would house the 4-H events for the fair, and then the replacement of the softball field with a new softball field and a new grass area that would be large enough to do the fair events like the carnival, as well as hold all of our vendors. But the added benefit is that it could be striped as a sports field in other times during the year. And that would entail us at some point building a new rodeo grounds. And we would do that across the creek on the north part of the property that we acquired earlier this year.
All right. So with the softball field, the county taxpayers would pay for it, and then it would be what? Coalville City would have the opportunity to use it?
The total project, if we were to build everything that's in the master plan, it's estimated to be between $14 and $15 million. We would anticipate that, first of all, we would have a lot of different partnership-type dollars within a project like that, which might delay or appropriately build those projects when those funds come forward. There's a lot of different things that we would look to. We would look to grants. We would look to partnerships with Colville City and North Summit Rec, sponsorships perhaps, other sources of funds to bring some of those other amenities forward. So we're going to be really looking at what does the fair need, basically, and then what do partners want, and what does the North Summit community want, and how can we bring those dollars to the project in order to make all that happen?
All right. So what phasing do you recommend? The staff report says that the project could be done in 2 years instead of three, but with 2 years you'd have to relocate the fair.
Yeah, likely we would have to relocate the fair under that scenario. Staff is recommending that we do it all at once. In fact, the council asked the question last night, well, we could phase this over 5 to 10 years, or what does it look like if we do it all at once? So we've gone back over the last 2 weeks and looked at that. There's not that much, because of the type of things that we're building, there's not much difference in overall cost, only about $100,000 of whether we do it in one fell swoop with one contractor or one set of contractors, or we do it over an extended period of time. As well, the fund balance that the county commissioners back in the day and now the county council have saved up over the years between transit room tax and wrap tax allows them to do a big project at once. We have approximately $13 million that we'll have projected through 17 in those fund sources. Of course, some of that supports some operations that we also do, but the council can contemplate doing this project all at once.
Okay, without bonding or anything,
without
you'd have to like borrow some money for a year or so, though.
I don't know that we would have to do that. So it's an interesting prospect that the pay as you go way might work here.
So you're starting to look at where maybe the fair could be relocated.
There's a lot of different possibilities. If the council chose to go that way, our South Summit area has a facility that could hold the fair. For a temporary period of time, but we're gonna let the council contemplate that tomorrow.
All right, joint session with the East County Planning Commission. What are the concerns here, or is it just a regular?
So it's a regular check-in. Our goal has always been to have them get together quarterly. We don't seem to meet that because of scheduling, but. Just like the Snyderville Basin Planning Commission got together with the council a couple of weeks ago, this is the same thing. I'm sure we'll be talking a little bit about the code revisions what's coming forward and when the council can expect to see this back in front of them.
Okay, whatever did happen, do we know?
They've been working on some small tools within the code that would allow master plan development. On the east side of the county to help deal with some of the density issues or zoning issues that have come up. And I bet that will be a topic that will be talked about on Wednesday as well.
And it's staff, the planning staff, that's trying to kind of guide this?
It's the Planning Commission that's guiding it. I mean, they're really the recommenders to the council on this. Staff is helping the Planning Commission research the issues and bring those forward, and we'll see what comes forward.
Water concurrency. Basically, these amendments just provide that concurrency is in the purview of the county health department, something that was approved a while ago.
That's correct. However, now one of the things that Councilperson Robinson brought up was that he'd like to see a little bit more strength behind the signature of the water companies in order to provide water to future development. So the thing that we went back to with staff and some of the council members was making sure that the plat signature, when it is signed, is tied to the code, where there's a statement in the code that says that the plat signature means that you will provide.
Water companies okay with the amendments?
They seem to be okay with that, but we'll hear about that tomorrow as well.
Okay. And then finally, it's not on the agenda, but the appeal of golf hole number 11 at Canyons Golf Course isn't on the agenda. So when do you think that'll be back?
So what I've been directed to do, we've been working with the appellants, and we're going to have a meeting between the county attorney's office, myself, and the appellants and some staff on Wednesday morning to talk about the progress. I just went out to hole 11 yesterday to see what progress had been made, and the height of the hole has been brought down significantly. So I think we're going to see some discussion about whether that appeal still needs to move forward or not.
Like significantly? I mean, it was like 12 feet.
I didn't measure it. I just observed it.
Yeah.
So I don't know what that final grading is, but we'll hear about that tomorrow.
Okay. Tom, anything else?
Don't forget to vote. It's voting time.
Okay. Thanks for coming in.
Thank you.
Summit County Manager Tom Fisher, KPCW News Time Now, 8:25. KPCW News Time Now, 8:25. Good morning. I'm Leslie Thatcher. It's the local news hour on KPCW. The Park City Planning Commission meets tomorrow, and as part of the discussion, they'll have a look at Bonanza Park East, a conditional use permit for Main Street, and the use of gravel mulch and landscaping and RV parking. Park City Planning Director Bruce Erickson now in the studio to explain all of that. Good morning.
Good morning, Leslie.
So with regard to Bonanza Park East, we're still trying to figure out if this application meets compliance with the general plan and the general commercial zone?
That's right. The reason it's on this week's agenda is that it was continued to this date from the previous meeting. Right now, we're still waiting for some information from the applicant, and then we'll go ahead and make our determination.
So we do have an overall master plan for all of Bonanza Park, or we're just looking at this little segment, which is bordered by Bonanza and Kearns?
Excellent question. Yes, we have both. We have the general plan, which talks about the entire area of Bonanza Park, including all the areas of Prospector, and lays out some goals that are consistent with the city council goals. So this small area of Bonanza Park, a couple of acres, is being reviewed in that context of the larger general plan. Primarily, the issues are how does access and circulation work on the site? reducing the number of accesses off of Kearns Boulevard into the location, changing the way you drive into the Maverick, those kind of things, making sure the road works, the signal works, all of that.
So even though it feels piecemeal, you don't feel like it is. I mean, it is part of a bigger...
No. I think in this particular case, we're just filling in the blanks specifically for this location. But I think between our transportation coordinator, Alfred Knotts, and myself and Matt Castle, we feel coordinated on the issues with the general plan.
All right. There are 7 or 8 buildings. There was a building that was kind of unmarked. We're talking about 277,000 square feet, commercial space, office use, residential. So everything in that corner on that acreage is coming down. The gas station, the clinic, the former Winsey's No Place Like Home building, the car wash, and Aya's Market. This is what, so phase one of how many phases of this development?
Very well could be an ongoing project. The property owner out there has a number of parcels, including the Boneyard, the space in front of Compark Plaza that Whimsy is owned. So longer-term plans, it could take 5 or 10 years to get this completed. That's why we're doing the transportation planning now. I think we need to get out there to the public that the planning department is not making a determination on the density allowed on the site at this point, nor are we making a determination as to height on the site. We have some significant concerns with the amount of commercial. I don't think we've seen the results of the final traffic work on that location. And if we were working on the general plan a little bit closer to the time we make a determination, the balance between commercial and housing may be not correct at this point. We may be looking for additional housing rather than additional commercial.
So of the, on the drawings, it looks like there are some tall buildings. I mean... three of the buildings have 3 stories, or a couple with 4, a couple with 5 stories. Is that 5 stories allowed?
Inside of a master development plan in exchange for other site amenities, you could get additional height. I will tell you honestly, as planning director, I don't know that the trade-off between additional height and underground parking is appropriate at this point, and we're going to be having long conversations with the Planning Commission about that.
Yeah, so let's talk a little bit about parking. Is there it's underground and enough?
The majority of parking on that site is going to be underground. I don't know if it's going to be enough yet because we haven't seen the final land uses in any of those commercial spaces. I don't think we want to underpark this location in that if we reduce the amount of parking, people seem to think we reduce the total number of trips. But I think in this case, it's just going to leak parking out to Prospector and cause people at the 2 shopping centers a problem. So we need to be very, very careful with that.
All right. So as I mentioned, there are 7, and then there was an 8th building. What is that?
I don't have them right in front of me right now. They're all mixed use, except for the 2 buildings that front on Bonanza and Kearns. And those buildings are proposed for, right now, we're discussing nonprofit uses in those locations.
All right. So again, this is coming back.
It will come back. Tomorrow night, I think we're just going to have a continuance. I don't think we'll have any discussion. If somebody from the public wants to talk, fine, but we're nowhere near making a determination.
Okay. Great packet, though. I mean, report in the packet, though.
Right.
Lots
Thank
of drawings
you. That was Francisco
stuff.
Put that together. He does a good job.
All right. Let's see. 515 Main Street has applied for a conditional use permit. They want to put up a tent in their private courtyard. What business is this?
Okay. This is the North Face building on the west side of Main Street, roughly across from the museum, slightly downhill. So it's the black building that was Talisker. And they have that little plaza on the north side. They want to put a tent in there. Normally, that's an administrative conditional use permit. But they want to have the same permitting that we have on the Town Lift Plaza, which allows them to do the tent more often.
So what's the tent going to be used for?
The tent is multiple use. They could use it for an outdoor cocktail party. They could use it for outdoor sales of merchandise. Right now, the occupancy is restricted to no more than the occupancy of the building itself. So even if they had the tent out there, right now the occupancy, I think, is 49 people. So even if they put the tent out there, they can't have more than 49 people.
All right. And I guess if it's in their courtyard, why do we care about it?
We care for a couple of reasons, not the least of which is disruption of the the HR1 neighborhood to the west in case they do music or outdoor events where there's a lot of noise or smoke from cooking. The tent is actually set back behind the rock wall and behind the tree in that plaza. So I don't think it'll be disruptive to the two historic buildings on that side of the street.
So how often could the tent be up?
If I'm correct on that one, let me just peek at it real quick. 15 times a year, 10 times, 14 days each, 15 times a year.
Okay.
So and it has to come down, which is similar to the permit that we have on Town Lift. It's similar to the tent permits we have at some of our big hotels for events as well.
All right. Is there a staff recommendation?
Staff recommendation is for the 15 times a year, 14 days each, with a series of conditions, including no mechanical equipment to set up and take down, all the rest of the restrictions.
All right. Let's see. What's the latest with regard to the gravel mulch for landscaping?
Gravel mulch for landscaping. We're going to have the first work session with the Planning Commission coming up on Wednesday. For those of you that are watching this carefully, it'll be approximately the same staff report that we gave to the City Council and then the direction from the City Council to move forward. We may have some draft conceptual ideas on how to deal with it. So, for example, in the historic residential districts, I think that in the side yard setbacks where we've prohibited gravel in the past, we'll probably go ahead and allow it. I think we'll put a percentage of gravel on the front yard and rear yard and prohibit parking on gravel.
Why don't we like gravel? Again, given that we're in a desert and, I mean, it's...
Well, we're not in a desert, and we need some precision on that. We actually get twice as much precipitation here as we do in Moab. So even if we look at the driest portion of our town, which is Round Valley, sitting in a rain shadow behind the Wasatch, gravel is not a native condition. Plants are a native condition. So if we want our neighborhoods to look native and use drought-tolerant plants, then we want to go ahead and do xeriscaping, not gravelscaping. Gravel is just that. It contributes to the urban heat island. It migrates to the streets. It doesn't do a very good job of taking care of neighbors unless it's contained with a fence.
Right. And then there would be no parking on gravel. Why is that?
Okay. So parking on gravel tends to breed on itself, and once we start to condition people people parking on gravel, the parking just continues to grow and grow and grow and grow. And all of a sudden, we've got people parking on rights of way. We've got people half in, half out of the street. We have multiple cars in multiple locations. It's kind of this balance between what people want to do and protecting the neighborhood.
Yeah.
Leslie, honestly, I think this has to do a lot with what we would call the good neighbor syndrome. And the good neighbor syndrome is if you have your neighbors and you want to live in the neighborhood for 20 years, you're probably not going to go up to tell them, gee, that tree looks horrible, or gee, your yard looks horrible. You're just going to kind of ignore it and let it go on. And so part of the role of the municipality in protecting neighborhoods is taking on that good neighbor role and saying you need to be careful of your neighbors. You need to watch and see that you're being respectful of your neighbor's condition as well. And so if you want to see cars and trucks parked with blue tarps next to you, then you'll go ahead and allow this continuation of parking.
So what is the use for gravel then?
Okay, gravel is useful in landscaping because it's attractive. It's a distinction between grassed areas. It also works in the wildland fire interface zone to break up vegetation types so the ground fire doesn't necessarily expand. So gravel has a role. It's important in the landscaping. There are places where it's appropriate. It's just not a really good idea to park on because all those oils and fuels and things from your car then leak down into the ground and it's impossible to clean up. The perfect example of that is our parking garage over here at China Bridge. Just walk through that garage and see how much oil is spilled. And if you really want that in the groundwater, or if you want it in Prospect or in the contaminated soils, we'll continue to use gravel as a solution for where to park.
So what about those yards that have landscaped with gravel?
It is what it is. Probably won't ask them to change. Probably we'll work with them to increase the amount of drought-tolerant planting and use of other materials to reduce parking.
So is gravel different than bark in that sense?
Yes, it is. Yeah. We want to do a plant-based, eco-friendly type of xeriscaping. We don't want to be Tucson, Arizona, which is completely gravel. We want to be consistent with our native environment.
And real quick on the RV parking, the deadline for moving it is coming up, and then what?
Okay. So in the RV parking, I think the city council wants us to be a little bit open to this activity, so we're going to try and balance neighborhood concerns, fire protection, and RV parking. We're bringing forward a proposal right now where a person could park their RV or their boats or their motorcycles or snowmobiles or whatever in their properly located driveway, typically in front of their front yard garage, from April 1 to November 1. You would have to maintain 2 cars of off-street parking, and you would have to maintain access to the garage because we don't want to increase the amount of cars parked on the street because we're allowing RV parking in the front yard. On the side yard, I think that we're going to allow it, but we need to maintain fire access to the rear yards. Fences are allowed up to 6 feet between neighbors, so I think we're going to put a height restriction on the size of the vehicle that could be parked in the side yard somewhere between 9 and 10 feet high.
So to park then on the side of your house, you'll have to have a concrete pad?
You'll have to have a concrete pad, and you'll have to have a fence between you and your neighbors.
Okay. But this is just for discussion, or are you making a recommendation?
Very, very open discussion at this point. This is the first time the Planning Commission has had to chat about it. The Planning Commissioners, some of them themselves, actually have vehicles parked inside yards, so we'll be curious to see what the outcome is.
Okay. Bruce, thanks for your time.
Thanks, Leslie.
Park City. 8:38, good morning. Well, coming up on Thursday, TEDx Women coming to Park City via a webcast. On the phone with details, I have the director of the Park City Institute, Terry Orr, who's making it happen. Good morning, Terry.
Good morning, Leslie.
So just give us a quick bit of background about what TEDx Women is all about.
TEDx Women was started, I think, about 5 years ago, and it was as a result of the fact that a lot of the TED programming was very male-dominated, and there were a group of women within TED who wanted to produce something that allowed women to have their own day and kind of focus on things differently and see things through a different lens. So it has existed for, as I say, I think about 5 years now.
Okay, so you're in San Francisco where this is happening live, and then it's going to be simulcast to Park City?
Yes. There'll be 3 sessions that will be live in Park City. And when we just got the license to do this last week, it was a little complicated about how it was going to work this year, and it turns out this is a very busy week in Park City, and all the usual suspect spaces we were going to put this in weren't available. And we're so grateful to the DoubleTree and Meg Steele and the group from Vail who said, we can do it in our ballroom and we can make it work.
All right, so how does it work then for locals?
Yeah, you show up there between, say, 8:30 and 9, grab a cup of coffee, have a conversation, get kind of settled into the day. At 9:30, the first live streaming will start, and Phyllis Robinson, our board chair of the Institute, will be one of the guest hosts. I believe Mo Hickey is going to be the other. I'm out of the loop right now. But the programming starts at 9:30 and goes to 11 with that session. Then there's another break. Then there's another session. Then there's lunch. Then there's a third session.
All right. So the cost of this is how much?
It's a $50 donation. It's really open to the community. The tricky part is that we are limited to 100 people. So that's really the most important part. If for some reason someone can't afford to pay, we just want you to come and show up for the day.
All right. How do people RSVP?
They can call our box office at 655-3114. And again, we are limited to 100 in this space. And there are great speakers. I think you've been to some of these before. And I can read off a list of names, but the thing about TED is most of us won't know who these people are until 6 months from now after their talks have gone up and everyone's very excited about who they've discovered. But there are, you know, researchers, social entrepreneurs, cultural theorists. We have some performers. We have Morley in the second session and Taylor Dane in the third session. There are broadcasting people, law professors. You know, it's a whole smorgasbord of interesting people with ideas worth sharing.
All right. And then you also have brought in kind of local folks as well. Is that going to happen?
That isn't going to happen. Tomorrow, Thursday is just going to be a live stream.
Okay. And the theme is It's About Time, looking at how time and attention shape our lives. Have you heard anything about that in San Francisco?
Well, today is my first full day, and it's for TEDx organizers. They put together a day for us. The Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation has been involved with TEDx since all of the licenses were granted, I think, 8-9 years ago. And so this is kind of a thank you from the Gates Foundation for people who put on TEDx events. So I will know a whole lot more by the end of today.
Okay. Again, 435-655-3114. Terry, thanks for your time.
You bet. We look forward to seeing folks.
8:43 now. Good morning. I'm Leslie Thatcher. It's the KPCW Local News Hour. Well, coming up on Thursday, Park City Film Series and Fire Films presents the film Unlocking the Cage. It's a film that deals with the legal rights of animals. In the studio, I have film series director Katie Wang, and on the phone with me, one of the scientists who's featured in the documentary, Dr. Lori Marino. Good morning to both of you.
Good morning.
Good morning.
So, Katie, we'll start with you. When, where?
Sure. So this is part of our Real Community series where we partner with local nonprofits to present a free screening to the community. So we're partnering with Fire Films, as you said. They're the underwriter. Sage Mountain Rescue, which is a farmed animal advocacy group. And then we've actually got support also from Utah Humanities. Looking at, you know, complicated issues, you know, in our society and communities that we want to elucidate that through film. So Unlocking the Cage will show at 7 o'clock. It's a free screening at the Jim Santee Auditorium, 1255 Park Avenue.
Okay. Well, let's have you talk a little bit about the film.
Sure.
About what you know.
So this is a film that came through Sundance this year, and it was the title obviously is very provocative, Unlocking the Cage. It's something I didn't get to see, so I was very excited to be able to bring it back. But it really addresses the issue of kind of our place as humans and how in the animal kingdom and how we relate to other animals that have a similar level of consciousness to humans. And Laura can certainly speak more to this because that's what her research focuses on. But so Stephen Wise, who's a lawyer out of Vermont, is arguing for personhood rights for chimpanzees in the film. And really, you know, if you have personhood rights, and you know, we've heard about this with corporations, then you're subject to habeas corpus laws, which means you can't be held against your will. And so he's looking at chimpanzees that are imprisoned for testing purposes at universities, as well as people that own chimpanzees and just have them as pets, essentially. You know, and these are animals that are very complex. I mean, they have consciousness levels similar to humans. They understand that they're being, you know, that they're imprisoned and that tomorrow they will be imprisoned. And so, you know, if you think about it kind of at that level, it's like confining someone to solitary confinement for the rest of their lives. And is that ethical, you know, as, you know, as humans, how we relate to these other animals, and, you know, in a community like ours, which is so in love with our animals and our pets, you know, we thought it would be an interesting conversation to bring to our community, you know, about how we treat, you know, these other animals, and should they have personhood rights? Should they be treated better? And should they, yeah.
Yeah. So Dr. Marino, what was your role in this film?
I was the science director for the Non-Human Rights Project for 2 years.
Okay.
And I appear in the film during one of the scenes where we are discussing some of the potential chimpanzee clients that they may take on.
So this film, I mean, there was a lawsuit then filed, huh? I mean, it went through the legal justice system?
Oh, yes. There were four lawsuits or four chimpanzees who were clients, and they were in New York. And so the final ones were two chimpanzees who were held at Stony Brook, University of Stony Brook in Long Island. And the Non-Human Rights Project actually got the closest anyone has ever gotten to getting the court to recognize a non-human being as a common law person. They were actually able to convince the judge to force the researchers at Stony Brook University to come to court and explain and justify why they are keeping these two chimpanzees in a cage.
Yeah, and we know that we can communicate with chimpanzees. Did they actually testify?
Pardon me?
I said we know that chimpanzees, that we can communicate with chimpanzees through sign language. So
yes.
did these chimpanzees actually testify during the legal proceeding?
No, they actually didn't come into court. However, we as humans were surrogates, and we spoke for them through the science of what we know about who chimpanzees are and the nature of their minds, which it turns out is very, very similar to humans. And they have a capacity called practical autonomy, which is, in a sense, a basis for common law personhood. And yet they are denied that, though they have that characteristic.
Yeah. So talk just a little bit about your research. I mean, what have you found out about animals? I mean, what do they think about being locked in cages? I mean, has that conversation happened?
Well, it is happening more and more. And I've done a lot of research on the effects of captivity on wild animals, for instance, dolphins and whales, chimpanzees, elephants. And the science is very clear on this. The science tells us that these animals cannot thrive in captivity. They barely can survive, let alone thrive. There's just a fundamental incompatibility between who many of these beings are and what they have to deal with in a captive environment.
Sounds fascinating. There'll be a panel discussion following the film.
Yes. Thanks to the support we received from Utah Humanities. We're actually bringing Lori Marino in, Stephen Wise, who's the lawyer featured in the film, for a Q&A after the film screens. And then we'll also have Dr. James Taubery, who's a philosopher from the University of Utah. I think it's a complicated conversation, but I think that it's one that, you know, I think we're obligated as members of, you know, the animal kingdom to have and to engage with and really think about, you know, what does it mean about, what does it say about us as humans to captive, you know, imprison these animals? And, you know, there's one argument about it's for scientific testing, certainly. And then there's the other argument of, you know, sometimes they're just captive for people's amusements. You know, they're kept as pets. And, you know, if you did the same thing we'd probably treat our dogs better than we do some of these chimpanzees and elephants. And so.
Oh, certainly.
You know, and when you think about it in that terms, it's like, wow, you know, how is that possible? And so, you know, it'll be a very engaging conversation. It is free and open to the public. So we encourage people to come at 7 o'clock. To the Jim Santee Auditorium.
Okay, Dr. Lori Marino and Katie Wang, thanks for your time this morning.
Oh, my.
Well, Carrie, the musical plays at the Egyptian Theater for one weekend only. In the studio, I have the production's director, Amber Hansen, along with two of the actors, Olivia Henry, she plays Carrie, and Anne Considine Olson, she plays Margaret White. Good morning to all of you.
Good morning. Thanks for having us.
So we all know the Stephen King story of Carrie. Now it's a musical. I mean, I was thinking about this, Amber, that the genre is horror musical, kind of
right.
In line with the vein of Sweeney Todd and Little House.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, and it's a rock opera, so the music is actually quite touching and chilling. And Carrie actually translates really well into a musical, and it's got all the same horror elements. So we do recommend it for ages 14 plus because there is some strong language and definitely some dark themes and some really scary stuff that happens in the show. But it's very relevant to modern times. We've set it in modern time. You know, it deals with some issues that all high schoolers deal with today. Bullying being the main underlying theme. And, you know, I think it's well written. The music's beautiful. And we've just got a killer cast. And these two ladies are by far, you know, shine in the show throughout.
Yeah. So. We'll get them to sing for us a little bit. So, but basically, it was on Broadway in 1988, and it bombed, and then been reworked. And
yeah, we were just kind of watching some clips on YouTube of the 1988 version. Very, you know, very done very abstractly. Kind of, it reminds me of Cats in a way. People are kind of in bodysuits and gyrating on the stage. But then it was it sold out every show, but it had a very limited run. The financial backers pulled out immediately, so it was considered one of Broadway's biggest flops. But then it was reworked, rewritten, and set very realistically with younger actors, and reopened in 2012 and was a success. And you know, it hasn't had a big run regionally. I know Utah Rep premiered it regionally last year. But we are doing something that I think is extremely unique, where we have cast high school aged actors as the to play the high schoolers, which isn't typically done because it is very edgy material. And it's part of the Greenhouse Conservatory with the youth theater program. So it's students that have gone through our entire youth theater program. They're very professional, very seasoned actors. And it's a chance to work with professional actors that play the adults and a professional director, music director, choreographer. And we do have a live pit orchestra that has come from the Park City High School. So,
okay. Real quick, Olivia, tell us a little bit about your role as Carrie. I mean, all I think about is the getting dunked with blood. Is that a big part of this?
Yeah. So she gets pretty severely bullied at home and at school. So that's been really interesting to kind of see that perspective of that and then relate the character back to people that I see in my school and kind of like observe that, because it is pretty realistic. I mean, this could happen other than the telekinesis part. Like, this is something that could happen in a high school. So I've loved playing her. She's a really interesting character to try and get into, and it's been really fun. So,
and you play kind of the nutcase made famous by Piper Laurie.
Mm-hmm. Indeed, it's a lot of fun to play, and she, yeah, it's a good example of a very skewed belief system and value system that she imposes upon her daughter in a very abusive fashion, but really justifies it to herself in terms of efforts to protect her from the world. And her sort of selfish and narcissistic approach to that relationship, just the two of them against the world, has some disastrous consequences in the end.
Okay. Real quick, we're going to have you guys sing. We're going to try. Hopefully this CD plays. Mm-hmm. We'll see if that works. But Amber, they give us, again, just four dates?
Yeah, four performances. It opens this Thursday at 7:30 p.m., runs through Saturday, 7:30, with an added matinee at 2 p.m. on Saturday. And tickets are reasonably priced, parkcityshows.com or 649-9371. Four performances only this weekend.
Okay, let's see if this works. We're going to play it, and we'll cue it up. The name of the song is what?
This is the Act One finale, and
yeah,
it's...
I remember Those Boys Could Dance, and it really encompasses their relationship and kind of what goes on in the show.
Okay, from Carrie the Musical. Let's see if we can take this away.
Don't you think it's time I should try to get along?
Whatever are you going on about, Carrie? Being different is the Lord's blessing.
Mama, people think I'm strange. All the kids have called me names.
Well, then just don't listen to them. It is written, he who hears my voice alone shall be saved.
Mama, can we stop and talk? There's this boy named Tommy Ross.
Carrietta,
I've been invited to the prom.
Prom?
I never dreamed that I could go. When he first asked me, I said no. He asked me twice. He asked me twice. And so I finally told him yes. I thought if I could make my dress, I might look nice. I might look nice. I know I'm not like all the others. Sometimes I dream in colors. Sometimes I even think I'm lovely. Nobody feels the things that I do. Mama, please, I'm just not like you. Maybe I'll find someone to love me. Tommy's a very nice boy, Mama, and he'll have me home by midnight. It's Saturday. I've accepted, Mama. I've accepted.
I remember how those boys could dance, pressing close on Friday nights. they could sweep me away.
Mama.
Oh, how those boys were demons of romance. In their cars, we chase the lights. I know just how boys will behave.
Not this boy, Mama. He isn't like the others. He's nice. You'll see. Really, you will. Everyone's not bad, Mama. Everything is not a sin.
Oh, how your father whispered in my ear. First the kiss and then the touch. Mixing lies with the truth. He would sigh and try to draw me near. Oh, he'd swear he cared so much. That's what the boys do. They make promises, then they'll break your heart. Then they'll laugh at you, watching you fall apart. Don't you think that I know? Don't you think this has happened before? It's the smell of the blood that will drive them mad, chasing you like before.
No!
Don't you know their game? Have you lost your mind? Can't you see Satan's passion has made you blind? And this boy's like the rest, and they're all like the serpents who crawl. You can beg all you want to, but I recall how your father came to me that night.
That doesn't mean that the same thing will happen to me.
With the smell of smoke and
gin. Give me a chance and you'll see.
And the lust in his eyes, and he took me and touched me. I tried to fight.
Mama, please listen. You don't hear a word that I've said.
Satan made your father
sin. Sometimes I wish you were dead.
And the sin never dies.
Mama, stop.
You're not going.
I've already said I would. I said yes.
Then say no. Tell him you've changed your mind.
Mama, come back.
I have to close the window. The rain is coming in.
I'll get them.
Ah! Telekinesis. Witch.
Okay, that's Carrie. You're listening to Community Radio KPCW Park City.